For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
We have the astute pleasure to be joined by your Cleveland Browns safety, Juan Thornhill, on the show. Juan, what's going on, my man? How are you?
I'm good, man. We got a good day out here. Not too hot. You know, clouds, pretty good day. I'm excited.
I was going to say, out of the Greenbrier, there were some scorching days out there. But since we got back to Cleveland, I feel like it's been a little bit better. Like the last few days, I know Saturday, the preseason game was a little cooler on the lakefront, 75. Like that's the temperature you're looking for, right?
Oh, yeah, that's perfect football weather. Like they say the cold is football weather. No, it's not. This is the perfect weather right here for football, you know. Not too hot, not too cold. A little bit of overcast, that's perfect.
You bring up the cold. This actually is a nice segue because we know there's a lot of talk going on right now with the stadium stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And dome versus no dome. I have been arguing with people that the idea that the cold is somehow an advantage for a team is not true. Because I always say, like, there's players that play from – they grew up all over the country. Like, Deshaun's a good example of this, right? Like, until he came here, he never really played in the cold. Like,
yeah.
He went to college at Clemson, whatever. He grew up in Georgia. Is there any truth? Dispel this now. Is there any truth to the idea that the cold is an advantage for any team?
I mean, it depends on how you look at it, honestly. It might be an advantage for some players, you know, like if you have a guy that's used to playing in the cold and he's facing off against a guy that's always in the heat, maybe that's an advantage, but not as a team, you know. Everybody's out there playing in the same weather. Like if it's freezing cold out there, everyone's hands is going to hurt, everyone's muscles are going to be a little bit tighter. So I don't really think it's an advantage unless it's like a guy that's like, I mean, he's just used to being in the cold. And then same thing for the heat, you know. Like, if there's a guy that's used to the cool weather and you go out to Florida where it's 90 to 100 degrees, I mean, I would say those guys out in Florida, they're used to the heat, you know, and that humidity. And then you have a guy that's coming from the cold, it's a little different. Like, it's harder to breathe and things like that. So I wouldn't say it's an advantage for the team, but maybe as a player.
Individual matches.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
I like that response. That's good. I want you to plant your flag, though. We know there was the big rollout of what the dome could potentially look like. Are you team dome, or do you like playing on the lakefront?
It depends on the weather. Like, sometimes, like honestly, like, there's times where it's, like, a nice day like this. You don't want to be inside playing football, you know. You want to be outside and enjoy the nice weather. But then there's times where it's brutal outside, like freezing cold and it's snowing and raining. And you're like, I wish we were inside today. But it also determines if they have a turf field or a grass field too. Because if you have a dome with a grass field, that's perfect, you know.
This sounds like a case for a retractable dome then.
Yeah,
that sounds
definitely.
like what Juan Thornhill wants.
Yeah, the retractable dome, if you can get the grass in there, that'd be perfect, you know.
Juan Thornhill joining us on the show. More specific to you, obviously last year didn't go the way that you wanted with the calf injury, which happened, you know, this time of year, preseason, and it just kind of lingered all season long. Just how tough was it for you to kind of have to battle through that all year and know that you couldn't give what you wanted to give to this team?
I mean, it was pretty tough, you know, physically and mentally. Like, physically being out there and, you know, you're not making the plays that you know you can make because you're a step off because of the pain. And then mentally, it's just like you wanted to be on the field with your team and you can't be out there 1 week. And then when you are out there, you have that setback each and every week. So it's pretty tough, you know. Like, I was excited to play football, but I told people, like, I wanted to go all the way to the Super Bowl, but at the same time, I'm sitting there like, I can't wait for this season to be over. Like, I didn't want to lose, but I was ready for the season to be over so I can fully recover and get back to 100% so I could get back and redeem myself and show everybody what type of player that I really am.
I feel like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong in this, but when there's like a serious injury, like you guys saw a bunch of guys go down with season-ending injuries last year, I almost feel like on some level it's easier to accept that because it's so finite, right? Like, you know, like, your season's done. For the soft tissue stuff, I feel like sometimes it could be harder. And this is just me kind of outside looking in, because you have to kind of battle with what your body's telling you, but also like mentally you want to be out there and you kind of have to fight that all year long. Is there some truth to that idea that it's kind of like the mental side of it's a little bit tougher because of that?
I mean, it depends on the time of year, because I've been that player that was, you know, I had a season ending injury and sit there and have to watch your team go all the way to the Super Bowl and win it. So, like, you know, that really sucks. You know, when you're sitting there, it's like a game that you've always dreamed of your entire life. And then all of a sudden you're on the sideline. Well, not even in the sideline. I was in the stands. So you're in the stands and you're just watching the game. It really sucks. But for, like, the injury where you it just keeps happening over and over, it sucks because, like, you want to be out there and you can't, and you can't play. And then all of a sudden when you are out there, you know that you're just missing out on so many opportunities. And you kind of feel like you're hurting the team, you know. Like, if there's a play that you know you can make, but then you're a step off from making it, that's, like, crazy frustrating, and I just didn't like it at all.
So now you come in this year, like you said, you had a chance to kind of recover this offseason. Just how have you felt throughout the early stages of camp, and obviously one preseason game kind of under your guys' belts, but where are you at health-wise going into 2024?
100%. Probably the best I've felt in a long time. Like, I was telling everybody, it was the most, like, I've ever pushed myself in the offseason. Like, I felt like I was back to, like, my college workout training. You know, like, most guys in the NFL, they don't push themselves that hard in the offseason. They work hard, but it's not a college workout. You know the difference between a college workout and a workout on your own. And I feel like I was in that college mindset, like, I have to get back to where I want to be. So I'm out there, like, I tell a lot of people, usually when I'm, like, squatting, I haven't squatted, like, over, like, 250 in, like, 4 years. Like, just because I'm like, okay, I want to stay fit, but I don't want to, like, squat that much because it will, like, hurt your knees and things like that.
Right,
you
right.
just want to stay in shape. But then this offseason, it was just a big difference. Like, I was just like, forget how my body feel right now. Like, I got to push through this so I can get to where I want to be. And I was out there squatting heavy, benching heavy. Like, I'm going back to working out like I was in college and pushing myself. So I definitely feel like I'm – feeling my best right now, you know.
Can you push yourself enough squatting to get up to what Nick Chubb was squatting in that video we all saw go around?
Listen, I wouldn't even think about putting that much weight on the bar. Like, that is just scary to me. Just, like, even with him, I know he can do it, but I'm still panicking, like, please stand.
You're watching that video, very tense on the edge of your seat, like, ugh.
There's so many things that I'm just sitting there thinking about watching him squat there. First of all, why is the bar bending like that? Like, that is, I know the bar is meant to do that, but at the same time, I'm like, dude, like, why do you gotta have that much weight on there? And then the weight is, like, this close from falling off. You know, like, if that clamp was to fall off, all the weight's gone, and that's not gonna be pretty. So I'm thinking about all types of stuff. I know that's – but Nick, he's just one of those guys. He's a freak of nature, you know, being able to squat like that. But I would never think about putting weight on there like that, ever, even if I had four people trying to help me lift it up.
Yeah, obviously that made the fans – that got the fans excited about Nick Chubb as he kind of continues to come back as well from a serious knee injury of his own. You got some flack last year for coming in kind of, you know, full steam ahead when they first acquired you, just because you had this, you know, very outward personality about yourself where you're like, listen, I'm ready to go compete for Super Bowls, and you kind of made that very clear on social media that you were taking this thing seriously and you thought this team had a chance to be really good. Just how did you deal with that? Because I think it's interesting, like, I have no problem with somebody coming in and having that attitude, especially for a franchise that, as we know, like, before you got here, there was a very much a culture of losing. And then in the last few years under Stefanski and Barry, we've seen that kind of change, and it's been a lot about the players they brought in, like you, like others. But to kind of have that attitude shift, I think, is a good thing for this franchise. But I think the fans sometimes have a hard time with that.
Yeah, it was pretty tough for me last year trying to come here and try to speak the positivity into the team and to the fan base as well. And as me doing that, I, like you said, like, there were some people that didn't like it. They felt like I talked too much. But that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to motivate everyone. Like I said, I try to motivate my team and definitely the fans as well, because I told them the fans play a huge role in our success, believe it or not. If you have your fans backing you up each and every week, truly believing that you can make it to the Super Bowl, and they talk that into you, like, you have a good shot at it. You know, like, you're going to go into the game, you're going to play so much harder for your team and for the fans as well, because they believe. But if you have someone that's sitting here telling you, like, I hope we win, we really don't have a shot, we're not as good as a team, if you're hearing that all the time, you start to believe it. You know, if somebody was to tell you every single day that you were ugly, Like, you, I know you can be the most handsome guy on the planet,
now
but
I'm
if you
to question
but if you have
more.
Everybody telling you each and every day that you're ugly, yeah. you're gonna believe it. Like, yeah. one point in time, you're gonna be like, oh, am I really ugly? You know. So that's it's the same thing. Like when it comes to football, if you have your fans telling you like, I believe in you guys, we're gonna. Like, we're behind you through it all. No matter if you have a bad game, great game, and they're still supporting you, it's great. You don't want to feel like you're competing against your fans and the opponent's fans as well. You know, your fans yeah. are supposed to be behind you at all times, no matter how rough it gets, you know. I'm not saying that these fans are bad at all. I promise I'm not. But that's my whole purpose, was to try to change the mindset of my teammates and the fans. And I feel like my teammates really bought into it, you know. And I was very vocal on social media last year, but – I was telling everybody this year, like, social media, like, it's done. Like, I deleted my Twitter. I still got Instagram, but you can't message me on there anymore. So, I still got Instagram, but I'm definitely taking a step away from Twitter, because I just feel like it played a big role in my success last year, because I felt like I was too worried about trying to get everyone to back us up, you know, instead of like focusing in on what really matters, and that's the relationship with my teammates and what happens inside this building.
Yeah, I do think it's a hard battle to fight in this town in particular, because I think you do have – there's a section of the fan base that I think does come in, and they're like, any year, gung-ho, Browns football is back. They're like, this is the season, Super Bowl. Like, they're locked in.
Yeah.
And I think there's another section that, like, they're more conservative, because they saw an 0-16 season and they're like, I just don't know. But I always try to tell people like Juan Thornhill coming in here, people like, you know, Deshaun comes here, whoever, like Jerry Jeudy, the trade this offseason, like they have no recollection of what happened before they got here. You know
exactly.
what I mean? Like, it's different people. So I thought what you brought to the table in that way was a breath of fresh air. And I also felt like it's probably something that's good for the fan base to actually experience that and hear people talking that way. And I don't think it's, you know, talking smack per se, or like talking too much. I think it's just like the positive. Like, to me, talking smack is like you see somebody out in the field and they're like jawing every play
yeah.
and all that. Like, you were just trying to be positive on the outside and have that impact the locker room on the inside.
Exactly. Like, I try to tell people, like, I don't like to really talk about my past, but like when we were in when I was in Kansas City, like, there was never a question if we were going to make the playoffs. Like, it was just like, we're going to be there. Like,
yeah.
that's what we're going to do. And then, like, I guess people, like, really got frustrated with me with that as well. And I'm just like, listen, I'm trying to kind of, like, twist the mindset. Like, they want to make the playoffs, but I want to kind of, like, put it in
it's
their minds. Like, we're going to be there.
Yeah.
Don't worry about any of that stuff. We're going to be there. We just have to be at our best once we get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's a good, I like that perspective personally. So
yeah.
you got a fan of me, Juan. Jim Schwartz, obviously, year two under his system. We saw what this defense did last year. Now, I always like to say, I feel like sometimes defenses in the NFL can be like bullpens in baseball. Like, year to year, it can be different. It can be tough to kind of replicate that exact level of success. How are you guys kind of approaching year two, and what wrinkles do you guys maybe – I know you're not going to give a ton away, but what types of wrinkles maybe are you guys throwing into the mix here to make sure that you don't just get figured out by everybody in the NFL?
You know, we're just trying to take it one day at a time. Like, yeah, we were one of the top defenses last year, but last year was last year, you know. We're not trying to go into it like, yeah, we're the number one defense this year. I mean, you got to bring that type of swagger with you, but no one cares. Last year, I feel like we kind of shocked people. Like, because, I mean, yeah. they knew we were going to be a good defense, but they didn't know we were going to be that good. Like, we're going into each week playing against teams, and we'll do it one week, and they were like, I'm not really sure if they're really that good, but let's see next week. And then we'll go do it again and be like, okay, this team really might be good. And then we do it again, and we're like, all right, they're the real deal. So it took a couple weeks for teams to really be like, all right, this defense is really crazy. Like, we have to come in with our A game, but this year is going to be a lot different. Like, we were one of the top defenses last year, so they're going to come in week one knowing what they're going against. Like, they're going to know we have a serious front. They're going to know we have good DBs. So they're going to come in, like, they're going to try to prepare as hard as they can each and every week to get ready for us, because they know that we're one of the top defenses.
Speaking along those lines, and again, we're talking with Juan Thornhill here on Afternoon Drive, Spencer German filling in for Nick and Dustin today. You guys have this kind of this gauntlet of quarterbacks, at least from the outside looking in, that are kind of on the schedule this year. You know, Dak week one, your old teammates in the Chiefs, and Patrick Mahomes is coming in late in the season. We know what the AFC North has in terms of quarterback talent. Is that something that you guys as a defense, though, because we on the outside talk about it as like, like that's going to be a tough schedule. Defense is going to have some struggles there. But do you guys relish that, like when you get those opportunities to go against the best of the best at that position specifically?
Let me ask you this. Hey, would you want to go into the playoffs playing against a bunch of teams that's at the bottom of the NFL, thinking you're really good, and then you get into the playoffs and you get smacked in the mouth because you haven't played against one of these top caliber teams? Or would you rather play against, you know, the best talent each and every week that's going to be in the playoffs? You know what you have going into the playoffs, and you know what you're going to be facing, so you're not smacked in the mouth at all, you know? Like, I would definitely rather play against the best, you know?
Yeah.
If you're playing against the best each and every week, you know what you really have. So I think we look forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun, you know, and definitely with me. You want, as a safety, that's the guy that's on the back end a lot, I like to play against a team that's going to throw the football. And, you know,
there you go.
Patrick Mahomes, Tua, and Jalen Hurts, all these guys coming in here, they're going to want to throw the football. So, you know, I'm licking my chops a little bit. I'm super excited about that.
Is that Chiefs game going to mean a little bit more for you, think? I know it's a little far ahead, where it's not till December. It's going to be a lot cold. We're talking about nice weather. It's going to be a lot colder that time of year. But are you looking forward to that one? Does that add a little bit extra just because that's your former team?
Oh, yeah. You know, like, I'm excited about each and every game. You know, I got a little chip on my shoulder every week, you know, because like I said, last year I dealt with that injury.
Yeah.
And I just feel like I'm going to go out there and prove what type of player that I am each and every week. But you better believe I got a little dot. I got a circle on the map for Kansas City, but I got a little dot beside him because I'm going to have a little bit more juice for that one for sure.
Juan, you've been very generous with your time. Brown safety, Juan Thornhill. Appreciate him giving us a few minutes here just to talk shop here as the Browns get ready for the start of the regular season. Preseason game number 2 coming up. They got joint practices with the Vikings, obviously, this week. We're glad to see you back out there healthy. Can't wait to see what you're going to do, man. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Appreciate you.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Saw some good stuff going on during the teamwork. I saw an overthrow from Deshaun, which I know nobody wants to hear, but it was true. Speaking of Deshaun, though, I do think it's worth talking about, because Kevin Stefanski obviously gave us the update today in terms of what the plan kind of is moving forward from Deshaun. And we got from him late last week that he's going to use the joint practices here this week against the Vikings, which those start Wednesday and Thursday, to evaluate and really get Deshaun his reps, if you will, for the preseason game number 2. He won't play in that second preseason game, but he's going to treat those reps in that situation, those opportunities, as his preseason setup. So we'll get to see him kind of in action against another team on Wednesday and Thursday, and I think those would be like super, super valuable reps for him that, again, not open to the fans, but all of us who will be here in Berea reporting on it, sharing you the video clips and all that, it'd be worth following along just to kind of get a sense of how he looked, how he played, what he was kind of doing out here. Because, again, first chance for him since he injured his shoulder in that game against the Ravens to do it against another opponent. And he doesn't have to worry about taking the hits on top of that. We did learn from Kevin Stefanski yesterday during his press conference that he is clear for contact, but that's not part of what they do during joint practices. They protect the quarterbacks at all costs during those. So, but I guess to go back to the Deshaun conversation, because we know he'll get those reps tomorrow. We know he'll get those reps in the third preseason game. I guess I'm curious from you guys, like, whether or not you think that's enough. Because we know this is a major, major season for Deshaun. And we know that he has a lot to prove, obviously, in terms of still coming over and trying to make the Browns look smart for the trade that they made for him and get back to being that top 10 quarterback. And are you somebody who feels like, you know, this is kind of the way that they do business now, with the preseason always evolving, and it's going to look even different at some point when they add an 18th regular season game, and then you're talking about only being down to 2 preseason games after that. Now, what I think is fascinating about all this is, and I specifically asked Kevin Stefanski the question in his press conference today because I was genuinely curious how they feel about getting work done in joint practices versus getting work done in a preseason game, and if they feel they get a lot of the same stuff accomplished or more. And Stefanski flat out said, like, there's no doubt in his mind he feels like they get at least the same amount of stuff done, and he thinks they actually do get more done because they can set up these scenarios the way that they want them to without having to worry about injuries to key players like quarterbacks and et cetera. So you're talking about, like, Stefanski brought up after the game on Saturday that they didn't get to work on the kickoff team and the new kickoff team as much that day, largely because, well, they obviously kicked off once with the change of possession, but they only scored twice. So you only got two other kickoffs in there altogether. And this, like, the setup with joint practices is you can come out and be like, well, we want to work on kickoff. And the other team says, like, all right, we'll work on kickoff return. And you can set it up, run it, execute it as many times as you want. So I do think there's a benefit to those. And I do think this kind of points to or speaks to the evolution of the preseason in years to come. Like, I don't know if we're going to always be talking about doing, you know, having preseason games, and if that's going to be a thing that is on the NFL calendar every single year, because I think more and more coaches are finding value in the preseason, or sorry, in the joint practices that they're getting to do. And Stefanski, he talked a lot about just, like, the conversations he has with other coaches about those, the time periods or time frame that they most feel is the best to have those practices. And he mentioned how the second week of the preseason feels like the right time, sort of right in the middle. But this is kind of the way of the NFL now, and I do wonder if at some point we get to having maybe even one preseason game or no preseason games, and it's all just joint practices for these teams. Now, I'd imagine you'll get some sort of final dress rehearsal no matter how much the NFL calendar expands or the regular season calendar expands. But at the very least, like, I think there's truly a path towards a world where preseason games become more obsolete and the joint practices are kind of the way to go because these coaches seem to value it so much more. So with that in mind and how it kind of relates to Deshaun, he has a chance to obviously get a lot of work in this week, but you won't see him out on the field doing a lot in terms of, you know, playing in a game setting other than that third preseason game. And I just wonder for people, like, if they feel like that's enough, if that's going to be enough reps for him to start the season. And, like, I think this, and listen, I'm willing to admit if I'm wrong here, because I have been on the train of I want to see him get as many reps as possible in game-like settings. But I also understand, like, maybe I am over-inflating the importance of these games as a whole and what actually gets accomplished or done by teams or players specifically in these games. And maybe it is just more about back-end guys trying to earn their place or earn their spot on the roster, and that's that. Maybe I'm completely wrong about this because, again, these coaches are emphasizing these joint practices more. So I'm curious to see what he looks like in these joint practices for that reason, because we're not going to get to see a lot more of him after that. Like, it's just going to be probably a couple series. And that's kind of my larger point here. Like, what's the value in just getting a couple series in a preseason game versus, you know, him participating in joint practices if they were to do a second session of joint practices? That's why I think the preseason is probably destined to change at some point. But it's also why I wonder, like, how many reps Deshaun's going to actually have before the season starts and what that kind of means for how this team's going to start. Because historically speaking, you can go back and look this up, Deshaun has generally gotten off to slower starts to his seasons. And I think we saw a perfect example of that last year. Cincinnati game was ugly. And I get it. It was ugly for both teams. It was raining that day. There wasn't really supposed to be rain in the forecast. And then there was just this cloud that kind of hovered over the stadium all day. And so it rained all day. It was ugly. It was mucky. It was not not the best conditions to be playing in. So I think offense in general was a slog that day. And where Deshaun sort of found his confidence in that game was as a runner, you know, in the run game, being able to kind of effectively do his thing that way. And so that was obviously good to see. But it took him until week three, that Titans game, to really start to kind of pick things up and look like the quarterback that we were hoping he was going to look like to this point And it just didn't really ever come to fruition until – because then, you know, he had that good game, gets hurt, out the next week, out multiple weeks, comes back, gets a couple more good games under his belt, and he's done for the season. So we're still kind of sitting here waiting for that to happen. But I am of the belief that the more reps, the better for him, because I think that puts him in a position where he can start the season hitting the ground running. Because I've said it. I'm done with the Russ thing. I'm not doing this anymore. You had a quarterback last year who came in off his couch and was slinging it all over the field to the beat of, you know, a 4-1 record similar to what Deshaun had, and taking this team to the playoffs. So I'm not going to sit here and, like, make excuses anymore of, like, Russ, and he's got to get it kind of acclimated. Like, I want him to be as ready and as capable as possible to hitting the ground running once, you know, we kick things off week one and kind of go from there. 216-474-0092. Kevin Stefanski announcing today Deshaun Watson will play that third preseason game. That plus the joint practices. You think that's enough in terms of the reps that he is going to have prior to the season starting and being able to kind of, you know, go from there and hit the ground running? Or are you going to want to see more from him? And maybe that's part of it too, is like maybe we trick ourselves into thinking that we need to see more reps because – it's not like us seeing it matters for some reason, and maybe they don't need the reps at all, which is why I said I'm willing to concede if I'm completely wrong about this in some capacity. But I'm definitely in the same camp as many of you where it's like, and again, maybe it's just a seeing is believing type thing, which isn't always necessarily true, but I want to see it to kind of feel comfortable about where he's at and know that if he starts the season well, he it was because he got those reps in. If he starts the season slow, we'll always have the doubt that that was part of the reason why he didn't, was because he didn't play more. But I understand, too, the Browns have to navigate the injury situation and not rush him back, and they're taking it, you know, very conservatively to this point, and they're going to continue to do that. But I just always, I don't know, I kind of felt like it would have been nice to see him get a little bit more reps out there than what we're going to see him play to this point, because I don't know that, like, the joint practices plus, what, a couple series? I think he only played two series last year in that third preseason game. Is that enough to get him ready? Maybe he plays longer this year. I'm going to guess not, though, because they're trying to manage the injury situation. But if he does, then maybe I'll eat my words on that, and we'll feel a little bit better about where he's at. 216-474-0092 if you want to jump in. Also on X, at @Spencito_. I did think we had a really good conversation with Juan Thornhill last segment. We obviously played you that interview. And we have another great conversation, hopefully, set to come, because Cuyahoga County Executive Chris Ronayne is going to join the show about 25 minutes from now. He's going to address the letter to the Haslams yesterday. He's going to address his remarks today at the press conference they held for the situation and about the stadium. We'll pick his brain on that. Daryl Ryder is going to join us for that conversation to chime in and ask some of the questions that he has about the situation as well. We're very much looking forward to that. It's a big deal because in this war of words, we're going to have some words exchanged here now on our airwaves with a chance to kind of see where how this thing is going to evolve from here and what the next steps are. 216-474-0092. Again, if you want to get involved, got Chris Ronayne set to join us in about 25 minutes. Keep it locked. Spencer German with you, filling in for Nick and Dustin here on The Fan. .216-474-0092. Got some people who want to jump in on the Deshaun conversation. And in fact, he's going to play that third preseason game. Will that plus the joint practices, will you feel comfortable with where he's at leading up to the season, knowing he's going to get some good reps in this weekend in that third preseason game, start at least starting it out and get a couple series potentially? We go to the phones. Drake in Cleveland, you're up next.
How are you doing today?
Good, man. What's up?
Thank you for taking my call. I was just hearing you talk about Deshaun and everything. I noticed you never say anything positive. Like, do we do anything positive when you watch him?
Wait, what do you mean?
I mean, like, you made sure you threw in that he threw a long, incomplete pass, but you ain't tell us what else happened throughout the course of the day. That's the only thing you seen was an incomplete pass?
Well, that really was the only thing I saw because of where we're positioned. But, no, I mean, if you jump on my Twitter feed, I share the good and the bad from practice. Most days, that's the case.
I wanted to ask you one question. Like, I'm lost at why we keep a stats in practice when you don't know what they're working on. The coach could literally tell them to try a drop pass to the end zone. You see you turn to the left and see a drop pass, and you're like, oh, it was incomplete. But you don't know what they're working on. So how can you comment on what the stats statistics is in practice? We're not hearing about Joe Burrow. We're not hearing about Dak Prescott. We're not hearing about anybody else but Deshaun Watson. All negative. Everybody else can just go and live off their laurels. But y'all make sure y'all report every little thing. And you don't even know what they're working on, but you reporting that he.
We don't hear about Joe Burrow here because we're not covering Bengals camp. But what I'll say is I'm not the person who's, like, sitting there recording every little throw and every little thing that Deshaun does. I usually just take the I take a lot of video of what's going on at practice, share those, and let people interpret it what they will. All I said was in that moment when I was talking, there was an overthrow that Deshaun had. Maybe it was a bad route. Maybe the receiver didn't run the right thing. I didn't say anything other than the fact that he overthrew somebody or there was an incomplete pass that was almost an interception. But I do think it's notable that Deshaun's thrown an interception on a number of the days that he's been out here that has been some version of an interception, whether it's on him or whether it's a miscommunication, because that stuff does matter. But I haven't just sat here and only ripped on the bad from Deshaun. Like, there's been some good stuff too. He had that really good pass to Cedric Tillman last week on a touchdown pass. That was like 45 yards. That was good.
Practice is to work on things. Practice is to work on things.
For sure. I'm not disputing that.
The media, like, that's my point. The point is just that in the context of you seeing him overthrow, maybe he caught the middle and the ball might be on time, but maybe the receiver ran a bad route that made it on time.
That's what I just said, Drake. I just said that. Again, okay. I'm not going to sit here and debate the semantics of one throw at practice that, again, I said I didn't know the whole context of the situation. I'm not sitting, standing, watching practice in detail right now because I'm doing a radio show. But that was the one thing I noticed from when I looked over was that he had an overthrow. That doesn't mean I'm, like, ragging on Deshaun. I give Deshaun a fair shake to do his job and do it well and come out here and practice and play and do the right things. And I analyze it as I see it. Right now, all we have is practice footage and reps. I'm not sitting here breaking down every little thing. I generally preface any conversation from practice, by the way, with the concept of it's just training camp, it's just practice. We can't really divulge much of anything from anything that we're seeing today about any player. There's certain levels of things that we can dissect, and there's a lot that's still unknown and remains unknown, and we won't know until we actually see him in a game setting. All I said was that there was one play where I saw him overthrow a guy. That's it. I'm not trying to tell anybody to decipher anything one way or another about Deshaun or about any player from what we saw at practice, and I would do that with any team. If I was covering the Bengals, I would say the same thing. Like, it is at the end of the day practice. Let's go back to the phones. We got Joe up next in the fan. What's up, Joe?
Well, I just wanted to say two things. I want to say, of course, we'd all like to see more of Deshaun in the preseason, and it just doesn't matter to us. I mean, they do what they want to do, but it drives us crazy. And you want to throw something at the television during the first two or three games when the television announcers or Jimmy Donovan on the radio says, well, Deshaun and the receivers have to get on the same page, and maybe they'll do that as the season goes along. You go crazy because they should be working on that in preseason games and, of course, in practice. But that's what's going to happen.
Real quick, Joe, I was going to say that's a really good point because, like, we talk about what they are working on in practice, what they're not working on in practice, you know, good or bad, good, the bad, the ugly. But that is the type of stuff that you're hoping they iron out at this time, right? Like, lead up to the season, they should be on the same page with a lot of things. There shouldn't be a lot of miscommunications. They should know where they're going to be. So, yeah, like, I think that's a really good point by you.
That will come up, of course, and there's nothing the fans can do about it. The other thing with regard to Chris Ronayne, I'm an old-time fan, and I want that dome stadium. It's time for Cleveland to get in the present time. And if Ronayne brings up that there's a tradition down there, that's a lot of craziness because they got the worst record in the NFL since 2000, the worst record in 24, 25 years. And then if he says the people want to be out in the elements, that's nuts. The Browns rarely win when it's a cold, snowy day. I mean, maybe the last time was the 64 championship game and most of the Colts were parting the night before, but they lost in 68 in the cold weather to the Colts, the Denver Broncos, the Oakland Raiders a few years ago to the Oakland Saints. That's a lot of baloney. We need that dome stadium.
Joe, I appreciate the call. I tend to agree with you. That was part of why I led into that with Juan Thornhill about just the weather and the elements. And I think it's one of the biggest lies fans have ever been told, that the elements are some sort of advantage for a team. Like, both those teams have to play in that. And if it's uncomfortably cold and your hands are frozen solid, that ain't fun for anybody. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're used to the cold or not. That sucks. Ron in Cleveland, you got about a minute here. What's up, man?
Hey, thank you, Screener, and thank you for taking my call, Spencer.
Real quick,
as I was telling your screeners, if I was the Haslams, I would have been really insulted for the city to come back and offer me $400-something million for a 30-year lease. That stadium is already in the billions of work and stuff that need to be done. What the city's offering to do, to cut the grass and trim the hedges for 30 years? I mean, that's ridiculous. And I'm a resident of Cleveland or whatever. I mean, if that was the plan, to trim the hedges and cut the grass, okay, we can do that. But it's time for the politicians, the leaders of Cleveland, to have a vision and have faith to step out and do something new for this city. That's what the city of Cleveland needs.
Ron, that's a really good call and a really good point by you. I got to let you go because we got to go to break here in just a second. But I'll say this off of what Ron just said. It does feel like, to this point, the Haslams have been more on the defensive, and they've been kind of playing it real close to the vest and, you know, not making any rash decisions. It's a war of words, but the more harsher, severe words seem to be coming from city and county officials. They seem to be the ones who are, like, really bucking against things and rallying against the Haslams and the plan that they've sort of laid out here. The Haslams have been very much like, we're trying to coordinate with everybody. We're trying to, you know, we're going through they've done everything right, it feels like, to this point. And that's just something I don't know about, where they've gone through the right channels, they've talked to the right people. I don't know why there's this staunchly aggressive sort of tone to everything that the city and the county does, where they're invoking the Art Modell, you know, rule or law. And it's just like, guys, like, you didn't have to do all this. Like, can't we all just kind of, isn't that the point of politics? We all come together and agree on things. I guess that's kind of gone to the wayside in 2024. But it's just, it's all very frustrating, and I do think there's a lack of vision here on some level. Well, we'll find out about that lack of vision, or maybe if there is a bigger vision for the county and the city here momentarily. Chris Ronayne, county executive for Cuyahoga County, going to join us here. Daryl's going to jump on. We'll ask him a bunch of questions. We had a whole list. Daryl just ran it by me. We're going to grill him the best we can and get to the bottom of kind of what's going on between the two sides when we get back. Keep it locked. It's Spencer German with you. Afternoon Drive here on The Fan. .216-474-992. Got some people who want to jump in on the Deshaun conversation, and in fact, he's going to play that third preseason game. Will that, plus the joint practices, will you feel comfortable with where he's at leading up to the season, knowing he's going to get some good reps in this weekend in that third preseason game, starting it out and get a couple series potentially? We go to the phones. Drake in Cleveland, you're up next.
How are you doing today?
Good, man. What's up?
Thank you for taking my call. I was just hearing you talk about Deshaun and everything. I noticed you never say anything positive. Like, do we do anything positive when you're watching him?
Wait, what do you mean?
I mean, like, you made sure you threw in that he threw a long, incomplete pass, but you ain't tell us what else happened throughout the course of the day. That's the only thing you seen was an incomplete pass?
Well, that really was the only thing I saw because of where we're positioned. But, no, I mean, if you jump on my Twitter feed, I share the good and the bad from practice. Most days, that's the case.
I wanted to ask you one question. Like, I'm lost at why we keep the stats in practice when you don't know what they're working on. The coach could literally tell them to try a drop pass to the end zone. You see you turn to the left and see a drop pass, and you're like, oh, it was incomplete. But you don't know what they're working on. So how can you comment on what the statistics is in practice? We're not hearing about Joe Burrow. We're not hearing about Dak Prescott. We're not hearing about anybody else but Deshaun Watson. All negatives.
Everybody else can just go and live off their laurels, but y'all make sure y'all report every little thing, and you don't even know what they're working on, but you reporting that he.
We don't hear about Joe Burrow here because we're not covering Bengals camp. But what I'll say is, I'm not the person who's like sitting there recording every little throw and every little thing that Deshaun does. I usually just take the I take a lot of video of what's going on at practice, share those, and let people interpret it what they will. All I said was in that moment when I was talking, there was an overthrow that Deshaun had. Maybe it was a bad route. Maybe the receiver didn't run the right thing. I didn't say anything other than the fact that he overthrew somebody or there was an incomplete pass that was almost an interception. But I do think it's notable that Deshaun's thrown an interception on a number of the days that he's been out here that has been some version of an interception, whether it's on him or whether it's a miscommunication, because that stuff does matter. But I haven't just sat here and only ripped on the bad from Deshaun. Like, there's been some good stuff too. He had that really good pass to Cedric Tillman last week on a touchdown pass. That was like 45 yards. That was good.
Practice is to work on things.
For sure. I'm not disputing that.
The media, like, that's my point. The point is just that in the context of you seeing him overthrow, maybe he crossed the middle and the ball might be on time, but maybe the receiver ran a bad route that made it on time.
That's what I just said, Drake. I just said that. Again, okay. I'm not going to sit here and debate the semantics of one throw at practice. That, again, I said I didn't know the whole context of the situation. I'm not sitting, standing, watching practice in detail right now because I'm doing a radio show. But that was the one thing I noticed from when I looked over was that he had an overthrow. That doesn't mean I'm, like, ragging on Deshaun. I give Deshaun a fair shake to do his job and do it well and come out here and practice and play and do the right things. And I analyze it as I see it. Right now, all we have is practice footage and reps. I'm not sitting here breaking down every little thing. I generally preface any conversation from practice, by the way, with the concept of it's just training camp, it's just practice. We can't really divulge much of anything from anything that we're seeing today about any player. There's certain levels of things that we can dissect, and there's a lot that's still unknown and remains unknown, and we won't know until we actually see him in a game setting. All I said was that there was one play where I saw him overthrow a guy. That's it. That's it. I'm not trying to tell anybody to decipher anything one way or another about Deshaun or about any player from what we saw at practice, and I would do that with any team. If I was covering the Bengals, I would say the same thing. Like, it is at the end of the day practice. Let's go back to the phones. We got Joe up next in the fan. What's up, Joe?
Well, I just wanted to say two things. I want to say, of course, we'd all like to see more of Deshaun in the preseason, and it just doesn't matter to us. I mean, they do what they want to do, but it drives us crazy. And you want to throw something at the television during the first two or three games when the television announcers or Jimmy Donovan on the radio says, well, Deshaun and the receivers have to get on the same page, and maybe they'll do that as the season goes along. You go crazy because they should be working on that in preseason games and, of course, in practice. But that's what's going to happen.
Real quick, Joe, I was going to say that's a really good point because, like, we talk about what they are working on in practice, what they're not working on in practice, you know, good or bad, good, the bad, the ugly. But that is the type of stuff that you're hoping they iron out at this time, right? Like, lead up to the season, they should be on the same page with a lot of things. There shouldn't be a lot of miscommunications. They should know where they're going to be. So, yeah, like, I think that's a really good point by you.
That will come up, of course, and there's nothing the fans can do about it. The other thing with regard to Chris Ronan, I'm an old-time fan, and I want that dome stadium. It's time for Cleveland to get in the present time. And if Ronan brings up that there's a tradition down there, that's a lot of craziness because they got the worst record in the NFL since 2000, the worst record in 24, 25 years. And then if he says the people want to be out in the elements, that's nuts. The Browns rarely win when it's a cold, snowy day. I mean, maybe the last time was the 64 championship game, and most of the Colts were partying the night before, but they lost in 68 in the cold weather to the Colts, the Denver Broncos, the Oakland Raiders a few years ago to the Oakland Saints. That's a lot of baloney. We need that dome stadium.
Joe, I appreciate the call. I tend to agree with you. That was part of why I led into that with Juan Thornhill about just the weather and the elements. And I think it's one of the biggest lies fans have ever been told, that the elements are some sort of advantage for a team. Like, both those teams have to play in that. And if it's uncomfortably cold and your hands are frozen solid, that ain't fun for anybody. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're used to the cold or not. That sucks. Ron in Cleveland, you got about a minute here. What's up, man?
Hey, thank you, Screener, and thank you for taking my call, Spencer.
No doubt. What you
real
got?
Real quick, as I was telling your screeners, if I was the Haslams, I would have been really insulted for the city to come back and offer me 400-something million for a 30-year lease. That stadium is already in the billions of work and stuff that need to be done. What the city's offering to do to cut the grass and trim the hedges for 30 years, I mean, that's ridiculous. And I'm a resident of Cleveland or whatever. I mean, if that was the plan, to trim the hedges and cut the grass, okay, we can do that. But it's time for the politicians, the leaders of Cleveland, to have a vision and have faith to step out and do something new for this city. That's what the city of Cleveland needs.
Ron, that's a really good call and a really good point by you. I got to let you go because we got to go to break here in just a second. But I'll say this off of what Ron just said. It does feel like to this point, the Haslams have been more on the defensive and they've been kind of playing it real close to the vest and, you know, not making any rash decisions. It's a war of words, but the more harsher, severe words seem to be coming from city and county officials. They seem to be the ones who are like really bucking against things and rallying against the Haslams and the plan that they've sort of laid out here. The Haslams have been very much like, we're trying to coordinate with everybody. We're trying to, you know, we're going through they've done everything right, it feels like, to this point. And that's just something I don't know about, where they've gone through the right channels, they've talked to the right people. I don't know why there's this staunchly aggressive sort of tone to everything that the city and the county does, where they're invoking the Art Modell, you know, rule or law. And it's just like, guys, like, you didn't have to do all this. Like, can't we all just kind of, isn't that the point of politics? We all come together and agree on things. I guess that's kind of gone to the wayside in 2024. But it's just, it's all very frustrating, and I do think there's a lack of vision here on some level. Well, we'll find out about that lack of vision, or maybe if there is a bigger vision for the county and the city here momentarily. Chris Ronayne, county executive for Cuyahoga County, going to join us here. Daryl's going to jump on. We'll ask him a bunch of questions. We had a whole list. Daryl just ran it by me. We're going to grill him the best we can and get to the bottom of kind of what's going on between the two sides when we get back. Keep it locked. It's Spencer German with you. Afternoon Drive here on The Fan.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Northside's and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.